The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Neurological Institute is a registered charity working out of the Mater Misericordia University Hospital in Dublin. It was established originally in October of 2009, and it works and supports countless people in Dublin and throughout the country who suffer from a neurological condition. Now, it's very surprising, but there's an estimation that just over 700,000 people here suffer from neurological problems. I'm joined by Professor Tim Lynch, who's consultant neurologist at the Mater Misericordia University Hospital and clinical director of the Dublin Neurological Institute. Good morning, Tim, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Now, that's an amazing statistic. 700,000 people. We're talking about one in six of the population, maybe.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, it's perturbing. One in three women get stroke, Parkinson's or Alzheimer's in their lifetime. It's about one in four men. Of course, we don't live as long, so that's partly the reason for that.
Okay.
But these are scary figures. And so brain disorder is a problem. It's also a big problem because I suppose we recognise the population, thankfully, is getting older. We're living longer, but we want to live longer and well. And the problem is if you start dementing in your mid-80s, that's not so good, is it? So it's a big tidal wave that's coming towards us, actually, in the healthcare that we're going to have to address in the near future.
Yeah, and you're hoping for a pharmaceutical breakthrough on dementia. But, you know, that's been a long time anticipated and hasn't yet arrived.
No, absolutely. I mean, I'm always an optimist. I think we've learned certainly with the pandemic that science and knowledge, and when Luke's in here, that really has driven that. And remarkably, that vaccines within a year. So when you really focus and invest in it, then you do get results. I think brain disorders are harder. And dementia is harder. And there's been a number of significant trials over the years, but unfortunately, they haven't worked. But there are other things we can do, so we can live well and healthily in many fashions. And it's clear evidence, for example, if you do physical exercise, it's good for the brain, not just for muscles. If you do intellectual activity, particularly novel challenges, good for the brain. If you get good night's sleep, it's good for the brain for specific biological reasons. And then if you eat well, it's good for the brain. I always add number five, I had laughter and a sense of humour, particularly living in Ireland, that's important.
There are all sorts of interesting insights into how the brain works. There's one thing that athletes often talk about, muscle memory. And I know you don't believe
drives
this.
Drives me potty.
It doesn't exist.
Well, I think the muscles are important that the person is well fit and all that stuff. Like Brian O'Driscoll and all the rugby players were very fit. But Brian O'Driscoll or Canning in hurling is a brilliant footballer or hurler because of their brain. And that comes down to movement control. And we understand the science of movement control quite a bit at this stage. If you think about it, the baby is born, my kid's born, they're a blob. They poo, eat and sleep. And remarkably, if you watch them, their head comes up, they look at you, they start turning over, they sit up, they stand up, they start running, they start walking, they start playing sport, they start talking. I mean, for me to pick up a pen with my right hand, the complexity of that is vast. My left brain has to send a message down to the automatic center for movement on the left side, I call the BG, and then it fires messages down to specific nerves on my right side of the spinal cord to activate specific muscles in the 30 muscles of my right arm at the right time, at the right strength to pick up the pen. And that's actually incredibly complex. If you think about then moving that into here I'm speaking, I'm not controlling my tongue or my vocal cords. It's just buzzing away coming out. So all that movement control has been well developed over the last millions of years with clear evidence of benefit in that. And that could be taken advantage actually in sport because there's opportunities for sport trainers to take advantage of that knowledge.
Now, you talk about, for example, the muscle memory that is not muscle memory, it's brain memory.
Yes.
You know, they do something 10,000 times and eventually you can do it without thinking. It becomes what do you call habitual.
Yes.
And the same thing with driving a car.
Yes.
Sometimes you get home and you realize you haven't thought about driving home, absolutely, but you've driven home quite safely.
Yes.
And that's the brain has been habituated to doing this.
Yeah, it's got an automatic pilot. So in some ways, that's the term they use, the zone in football, in that we recognize deep within the brain, there are two structures called the basal ganglia. I call them the BG, which is easy. So our cortex up top will say, okay, take me home with the car. It just doesn't. So over practice that we've learned that. But when you first learn to drive the car, of course, you're clunking the gears, you're doing the kangaroo driving, you're bouncing, the car is cutting down. You're learning what I call by goal-directed movement initially, but in due course with practice up to 10,000 hours, you shift it into habitual. And that applies in other areas. For example, to hurl. My son did a bit of hurling, but I mean, it's about 10 years of practice and training. I mean, hurling is incredibly
complex.
But
it's not the muscles you're saying. Now, you have to have the muscles to have the power.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you're saying that it's the brain that's being trained. mind.
So, you know, Canning scoring that goal in the semi-final, which is ridiculous, when he's surrounded by four defenders and he puts it over his left shoulder and scores from, you know, 90 metres out. Outrageous point. But that was just because he did it automatically. He didn't think about doing it because he trained and practiced so much and his BG did it for him. He was in the zone. He was able to hit it nicely.
Yeah. I often think about, you know, playing, say, golf or tennis. And if you're aiming for a green and you're, you know, maybe 150 yards away, small patch, and you're aiming. Those of us who are not particularly good, if we get anywhere near the green, we're happy. But for the McIlroys of the world, they're looking at that green and they're deciding where on the green precisely they're going. You know, it's goal-directed, but based on they know they're going to swing properly. They just know that. It's not something they worry about, as I would.
Yeah, actually, Darren Clark was an interesting comment about his recent win in the seniors, in that he said he was just very calm. What he was talking about, he was in the zone. His cortex, his brain was not interfering with his golf swing. So if you think about the putt, I do lovely jabby putts sometimes because I'm thinking, oh, I've got to get this bloody ball in the hole. Whereas if I can relax and let it swing and go in the automatic zone, the habitual movement from practice before you hit it well, if your cortex interferes with it, you jab it off. And the same applies nicely in golf. So Rory in his final round was excellent, obviously, in the recent British Open, but the putts weren't dropping. Perhaps he might have been thinking too much about them. If he was able to get into the Cameron approach of being automatically putting, he would have sunk them. So it's that balance between cortex thinking about movement versus the habitual area in the BG. And in sport, whether it's a putt or whether it's a serve in tennis, when you're in that BG zone area, it goes better.
Now, we had hoped to have Jim Gavin here because he is a great supporter of yours in the Neurological Institute. He's stuck in Brussels, so he couldn't be with us, but he's with us in spirit. The business of constant exercise, how does that feed into brain health?
Good question. So if you think about brain, you've about 100 billion neurons in our brain connecting to each other. Each of those neurons are like a big tree with branches. They've got trillions of connections we call synapses. Now, those are very plastic. By that, I mean they can be modeled. So when the child goes to school and is learning new languages or whatever, they're actually generating new branches. So in many ways, some of the teenagers are so mopey and tired, at least my gang are. I give them an excuse. They're busy metabolizing the brain, making new connections and developing them more and more detail. Great example of that actually was Einstein's brain was looked after he died, and the mathematical area of the brain is up on the left side, posterior, the back portion of the brain called the parietal lobe, and it was bigger. And the assumption was that in Einstein there would be lots of more neurons. There weren't. But when they looked at the connections, the density of synapses was really dense, and he developed those over a period of time, clearly. So that's what we do when we exercise or when we do intellectual activity, or the kids in school. They're remodeling their brain. They're making new connections in language, in mathematics, in science, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, in older people, they're often advised, you know, to keep up with the intellectual activity, and some people just do crosswords, whatever it might be. Does that work? Or do you have to do something quite radical? I mean, some people will learn a new language, for example.
Sure. Yes, I have a wonderful patient who's 78 with Parkinson's, who's teaching himself Japanese, which is a challenge. There's been a wonderful, and again, science often gives us good hints about this. A good Irish colleague of mine, Dominic Walsh, who's now based in Boston and Harvard, did a wonderful study about 8 years ago, and he took a series of little mice called transgenic mice, and within those mice, the human Alzheimer's gene was put into it. And the first set of mice demented, unfortunately, and an autopsy were found to have Alzheimer's. The second set of mice, actually, they gave exercise to, so they were busy in the cage beavering away. And although they did develop Alzheimer's, there was a time lag. They delayed the onset compared to the first set. So exercise seemed to be protective in delaying it, which is not a bad deal. For example, if I get my Alzheimer's at 90 rather than 85, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. That doesn't sound too bad. The third set was really interesting. That was novelty. And these set of mice in the cage had to figure out puzzles and mazes every day before they got fed. And they didn't get fed unless they figured out the problems. They didn't dement. They didn't get Alzheimer's. They had the same nutrition, the same food, same
and the water. Same gene transported
Absolutely.
into them.
So novelty seemed to be protective for that group. So actually giving ourselves new challenges as we get older is really helpful. So I think doing the Sudoku and the crossword is important, but sometimes also, is there something new I'm going to take on?
Yeah.
Is always a good idea. Whether it's learning a musical instrument, whether a new language or whatever, I think that's an excellent idea as we get older.
One question has come in about any drugs that might help to reconnect the hypothalamus in children with Prader-Willi syndrome?
That's a difficult question, but off the top of my head, I don't think specifically Prader-Willi syndrome, as they will know, is a complex disorder, and it involves dysfunction, certainly, of a deep area of the brain called the hypothalamus that's involved in many aspects of the brain, but in particular in hormonal control otherwise. But it's a difficult disorder to treat, and I don't know of any specific new treatments for that.
All right. Now, let's talk about the Dublin Neurological Institute and what you're up to. You could be running, you could be walking, you could be doing it virtually.
Yes.
Tell me more.
So we're a charity and we run this really as, I think, a centre of excellence, building into it the clinical care of patients, but also teaching, training, research, innovation. Because why is that? Because patients do better when they're in that environment. So we think we're a centre of excellence and we need to raise funds to keep it going and do new things. So this Sunday, on the 31st, we're having a virtual fun run, which is a remote event. They don't have to go. They just can do it.
If do
they
it wish. Locally.
Absolutely. And if they wish to record on their app, they're welcome to do that and they could always send it in to us. And as part of that, then, of course, we've got a GoFundMe page and all that sort of stuff and social media. And we'd very much welcome any support for that. So on our both website, which is neurologicalinstitute.ie, or they could use the social media pages and Instagram, which I think is at the DNI 57. That's because we're 57 Eccles Street. That's where that comes from. Our Twitter, I think, is at DNI _ neurology. And we'd very much welcome any support.
Yeah, and the GoFundMe page is gofundme.com/DNI Fund Run. And that's how you'll get there. Yeah. And if you go on your own website, you can click a yellow button to donate. Now, tell me what it's like, because I'm sure when you started it out in 2009, it was an old Georgian building on Eccles Street and you had to do everything.
Yeah. So the poor CEO of the matter got pounded to death by myself because I needed space. So we had a number of these buildings on Eccles Street that had been bought many, many years ago. And 57 had fallen into disrepair. There was a roof and there was a ceiling and there was floorboards and there was a staircase, but the rest was pretty much decrepit, including a nice tree that was growing down through it, which I thought was a nice feature, but I wasn't allowed to keep it. So we renovated it, but that cost about $3 million. And within that, now we run our department and developed it and expand from there with both outpatients and day ward. But in particular, we've really pushed more and more, recognizing that, again, teaching and training and research is important. And the real pandemic has taught that, actually, that I think has taught the population that data is important and new work is important. Otherwise, we're not going to develop new therapies for things like Alzheimer's. So that's where we beaver away at that within the department. And we have a number of people recruited doing research in different areas, particularly in Parkinson's disease, movement control, new innovations. So, for example, I have one patient, I'm trying to develop another. We develop a Parkinson's dog. And the idea there is back to movement control, in that some people with Parkinson's end up with a problem with what's called freezing, and their feet get stuck to the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to treat. It doesn't respond to medication well. But we had a simple idea. Well, actually, if you had a disability dog like you have, say, if you're blind or if you've got cerebral palsy, maybe the dog could help you walk and free up the walking. And lo and behold, our patient Duncan, who's a fantastic, quote unquote, he says, this is the best intervention he's ever had for his Parkinson's the last 20 years, because he's out and about walking and he doesn't freeze and the falls and all that stuff have dropped off.
What about dancing? I read a study one time, and we probably covered it on the program, that people suddenly their tremors may disappear while they're dancing.
Yes, that's an interesting one. So this is a great story, really, with a mad Italian neurologist who is passionate about Irish music and used to come over to Fecal on a regular basis. And about 15 years ago was playing down in Fecal in Clare when there was an old man came in with bad Parkinson's tremoring and shuffled in, music came on and up he got and he flew around the dance floor with the reel. So the neurologist started thinking maybe the music was freeing him up. So incredibly, he's contacted, there's an Irish dancing school in Venice called the Black Sheep. Don't ask me why, but it's there. Contact them. And he started getting a bunch of his patients with Parkinson's in Venice doing Irish dancing. And then about 10 years ago, I had a big meeting here in Dublin. He came over and he brought his patients with him and he showed this. And I thought, oh God, we can't have an Italian doing that. So we did a study with him looking at Irish dancing versus regular rehab and physio. And it was at least as effective in that it got patients with Parkinson's moving well, but socially they really had a ball. They found it fantastic, the real uplift. And so Irish dancing, and there is actually busy beavering with around the country, ongoing Irish dancing with a lot of patients in Ireland, actually being coordinated both virtually and through the pandemic. So we have a lot of people in Ireland around the country doing Irish dancing as part of their therapy.
It's very interesting that the very act of doing the dance, which is different to the normal walking that they would do, that it somehow overrides.
Yes. So if you think about it, walking versus standing versus running is a different engram, if I use that term, within the BG, the basal ganglia. And what's interesting is that sometimes it's a specific problem with walking, but if you break into a run or you dance, you're better. I actually have a patient in at the moment with a different disorder, but he's having arching of his back. and he can't stand or walk well. But when he runs, he's fine. It clears up. It just releases it.
Yeah.
So it's a different region of the brain of the BG that's doing it, so it doesn't trigger the problem. And the same can apply in Parkinson's.
And finally, I should ask you about another novel technology. Well, novel enough. Deep brain stimulation.
Yeah.
So not suitable for everybody, but...
No, but it's a great new innovation. And as you know, from a, I suppose, an engineering perspective, medical engineering perspective, is remarkable. So we have the All-Ireland Deep Brain Stimulation Service in the matter running out of the DNI, which is funded, thankfully, by the HSE. The first female neurosurgeon in Ireland was appointed to that, to the matter, and to Beaumont, Catherine Moran. She's doing the surgeries in Beaumont, and the patients come to us, and my colleague Richard Walsh runs the team, and he both programs and reprograms the devices. It is highly effective with somebody with tremor, whether it's Parkinson's tremor or the tremor, that familiar tremor that Catherine Hepburn used to have in the movies, you remember, Catherine, and it's very effective that. And you instill, or you insert within the brain, in the specific region of the BG, the basal ganglia, a stimulator, hook it up to a wire and a pacemaker under your collarbone, and instead of pacing the heart, you're pacing the brain. And it seems to short circuit and block the tremor in that fashion. So it can be quite specific for specific patients, but not for every patient, for Parkinson's and other forms of tremor. What's also remarkable is increasingly in the international world, it's starting to be used in other regions or other areas of the brain for different disorders, including trials in depression or in Tourette's, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an interesting device. It's a wonderful mechanical engineering device. And we've got a number of studies going on actually with the engineers in both Trinity and UCD on that, which is, as a side, engineers, as you know, think differently than we do. But it's a very nice combination actually, because that nice critical thinking can be used to tease out some of the issues and problems.
I remember, I think the last time we spoke, that I wished we could clone you, because no, there simply aren't enough neurologists around the place.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you improved your numbers at all?
We have. Well, the first thing, my wife would regret very much so if I was cloned. God bless her. We're up over 40 at this stage. I was number 11. But, you know, we're still way back on it. And I think it probably just needs to be the recognition that these brain disorders are coming at us hard and fast. And the numbers are going up because of aging. And indeed with head trauma and you know, from your own personal family, that's a problem. We don't handle it well in Ireland. And it's also from a concussion viewpoint, these things are coming at us big time. So we need to gear up, and not for whatever reason, but the brain, let's face it, it's got to be the most important organ in the body. Everything else you can transplant, but you can't transplant your brain.
Tim, it's a great pleasure having you in studio with us today. Professor Tim Lynch, who's consultant neurologist at the Mater and clinical director of the Dublin Neurological Institute. And don't forget the charity, a virtual fun run, which is happening on Sunday. It's a do 5K. You can walk it, you can run it, you can do it anywhere near you. And if you want to donate, gofundme.com/DNI fun run, or visit the website, which is the neurologicalinstitute.ie, and you can click on the donate button. Tim, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.